This year, like every year, we brought you the stories of people trying to navigate through our complicated healthcare system in some way. A patient crushed under a massive ambulance bill.
Where am I going to get a $7,000? Why is this so high? Why are you sending me another bill?
State officials trying to make care more affordable.
You don't want to go too far. One person's healthcare cost containment is another person's revenue reduction.
And inmates finally getting health insurance before they leave incarceration.
There's a major disruption, and so that disruption leads people to becoming sicker and potentially dying in the community.
Today, some of our favorite stories and their impact. From the studio at the Leonard Davis Institute at the University of Pennsylvania, I'm Dan Gorenstein. This is Trade-Offs. You may be wondering, why do an end-of-the-year look-back episode? A few reasons. One, Shannon Crane, who runs our annual audience survey, tells us that you value journalism that centers evidence, tells stories, and helps break down the complicated, costly, and often counterintuitive world of healthcare. So we've designed today's show to give you a better sense of how Trade-Offs has had an impact this year. Two, we want you to be excited about the work that we do, and that enthusiasm will inspire you to become a first-time donor or keep up your generous support to the show. Three, and this is the most important, Trade-Offs is more than a collection of reporters, engineers, and folks running operations and marketing. Our show is you, the doctors and nurses, the policy wonks and researchers, the patients and industry insiders, the students and elected officials, who listen, pitch stories, give great feedback, and share the work. Today's episode, I think, demonstrates how we come together, this community of health policy decision makers and journalists, to have more honest health policy conversations and grapple with some of the toughest problems our country faces. We're going to do that by having each of our reporter producers walk us through an episode that they think packed a punch. We'll kick things off with Ryan Levy, who is coming to us from his home in Washington, D.C. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Hey there, Dan.
Ryan, what's the story that you have teed up for us?
Yeah, so back in February, Dan, we put out a story about how, for the first time, the federal government was providing Medicaid to some people before they left prison, jail, or juvenile facilities.
And this was a big deal because for as long as Medicaid has been covering low-income and disabled people in the U.S., nearly 60 years, people who were incarcerated were effectively banned from using this program.
Exactly. And that meant that, you know, many of the 600,000 people released from prison each year rejoined society with serious health needs but no access to health care. So to help us and our audience fully appreciate what that experience is like, we talked with a man named Lee Reed. Lee was 62, and he had just been released after 20 years in California prisons, and he had agonizing back pain. Here's a clip from that episode.
Imagine somebody standing on your foot, and you can't stop that pain. And they're just going to stand there. They're not going to get up off of it. It's going to be there when you wake up. It's going to be there when you go to sleep. Half the time, I never even got out of the bed while I was in prison because I couldn't stand up. It was so painful.
You'll probably remember, Dan, that Lee knew he needed back surgery. The doctors in prison had told him that. But he spent his first two nights out of prison sleeping in a parking garage stairwell with his walker as a blanket. It took weeks for him to see a doctor and 6 months for him to get his surgery. All the while, he was homeless and unable to work and restart his life.
I remember Lee's story being pretty hard to hear. The pain, actually, in his voice was just so clear. And it really epitomized the problem that policymakers are trying to solve by offering Medicaid to people like Lee before they leave incarceration. The hope being that making sure people have insurance and some sort of like connection to a doctor who they trust before they get out will mean they can get the care they need quickly and not suffer the way Lee did.
That's right. And what made this story so exciting to me, Dan, was that it's a relatively new policy. So it's something that lots of policymakers could actually learn about from us. You know, Jamie Snyder, the former director of Arizona's Medicaid program, told us that she listened to that episode for exactly that reason.
We would kind of regularly, as an executive team, use the information from the episodes to inform kind of our policy discussions. We really were able to draw on some of the discussions from different Medicaid leaders across the country when we were having conversations about really tough issues around coverage, around benefits, around reimbursement.
What I really appreciate there about what Jamie said is that she and her team relied on our Medicaid episodes, the one about prisons and others, to help them think about what they wanted to do in their state. That's exactly the kind of impact we set out to have when we launched the show back in 2019. Ryan, thanks so much for your great reporting on this.
No problem, Dan.
Sticking with stories about states as these health policy laboratories, that brings me to a piece from reporter-producer Alex Olgan in her home in Portland, Oregon. What is up, Alex Olgan? Hello.
Hello, Dan Gorenstein.
Okay, so Alex, you spent some time this year looking at one of these state experiments. Tell us about the results.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So as we all know, healthcare prices keep climbing, which is one reason nationwide spending keeps going up. It's expected to grow more than 5% a year over the next decade. That's faster than the whole U.S. economy. So when I heard that a state agency forced one of the biggest, most prestigious hospitals, Massachusetts General, to cut prices, I found it super interesting. I'd like to play a clip from the episode, which originally dropped in February. We'll pick up the action with state official David Seltz explaining that Mass General had agreed to reduce costs by $200 million.
This is the first performance improvement plan like this that I know of in the entire country. So when you break new ground, it can be scary, but it is also thrilling to see how this process will continue to play out.
We profiled Massachusetts, Dan, because a handful of other states are looking to it as a model for limiting healthcare spending. And here's an interesting fact. Those nine states make up 20% of our country's total population.
Really appreciate it, Alex. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Dan.
Here's what I appreciate. Alex took something super wonky, one state trying to curb health spending, and tell a compelling story about it. That is a tall task. After the piece ran, we heard from Christine Herron at the Healthcare Foundation Milbank Memorial Fund. Milbank helps other states tackle prices, and Christine told us our episode nailed that delicate balance of not harming industry while trying to make care more affordable. Look, very few newsrooms even want to take on this important story, let alone have the journalism chops to pull it off. The feedback we got from both Jamie and Christine tells us, and you, that experts in the field rely on our work to inform their work. Honestly, it's hard to imagine a bigger compliment. After the break, we hear from senior producer Leslie Walker on one of her favorite stories and some episode-inspired research.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before the break, we talked about how people like Jamie Snyder and Christine Herron rely on the show. Another reason you tell us that you trust trade-offs is because we dig into the real world, well, trade-offs in health policy. We work hard to prioritize both sides of a story, which is exactly what we did with this next episode. And that comes from senior producer Leslie Walker. She is based near the beach in San Francisco. Surf's up, Leslie.
Hey, Dan.
So you looked into surprise ambulance bills costing patients hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars. And we partnered with the healthcare news outlet Stat to do this story. So Leslie, tell us about the reporting.
Sure. So, I mean, as you can imagine, Dan, these ambulance charges can be super hard to avoid, right? Like if you're in a coma, a car crash, how can you possibly know if you're taking an ambulance covered by your insurance? So even patients with great coverage like Precious May Clark in Columbus, Ohio, are getting tagged with these big, unexpected bills.
I thought I was prepared. I thought I covered my bases. But this ambulance bill, it rocked my world.
Precious had reached out to Stat reporter Bob Herman for help clearing a $7,000 charge for an ambulance ride she thought her insurance would cover. I worked with Bob and his colleague Tara Bano to go beyond that one bill, help Stat's readers and our listeners understand why patients get these kinds of surprise charges and why putting an end to them is harder than it sounds. One big reason, a huge chunk of these ambulance fees, Dan, don't go to your typical healthcare corporations. They go to public agencies, like the fire station down the street. So I flew to Southern California to visit one of those fire stations and better understand what all this money is going to. Here's a clip from the episode featuring Oceanside Fire's Deputy Chief Pete Lawrence.
The cost of readiness for public and private EMS providers is a huge cost for us, whether they go on a broken finger or they go on a cardiac arrest. You don't have the ability to say, leave us a message and we'll call you back as soon as the unit's available.
Now we go on in the episode to explain that Pete's costs run about $1,200 per ride, but the unit typically only gets half that, a level that puts Chief Pete in this tough spot. Hit up patients or seek taxpayer dollars.
Right. As you say in the piece, that's money that could instead go to libraries, parks, or whatever.
Exactly. And you know, Dan, I was proud of the work we did on this episode, in part because, to paraphrase one of our sources, it's easy to say we should shield patients from these surprise charges. And a lot of other reporting on ambulance bills has made that case very clearly. But it's a lot harder to answer this question. Who should pick up the tab instead? And how much should insurers or taxpayers pay for this potentially life-saving service? And I thought we really tried to wrestle with that question in an honest way.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're welcome. Oh, and Dan, before I go, there's one other thing I just gotta say about this episode. I just really love the sound design. Check this out.
Where am I gonna get a $7,000? Maybe this is an error. Why is this so high? Was my insurance used by someone else? Why are you sending me another bill? $7,000. Kind of like clogged my brain.
The man, the myth, the legend behind that creativity is Andrew Perella.
Hark, a producer calls to the Bat Studio. Dan.
Perella, the red light's on, dude. We're recording over here, man.
Sorry. Got a little carried away there. I just love this stuff.
One of the things we're most proud of at Trade-Offs, beyond that lovely sound design from Andrew Perella and Cedric Wilson, is the fact that our journalism is used in more than 55 college and university classrooms around the country. Now, one of my favorite episodes of the year, it starts with University of Minnesota health economist Hannah Neeprash on her couch back in 2021. Hannah had just put her toddler down for a nap and put on our episode about ransomware attacks on hospitals. Listening to that story, Hannah realized that it was impossible to predict where a ransomware attack would hit and when.
Which, as terrible as it sounds, got my research spidey sense tingling, because it suggested that maybe there was a natural experiment to study here.
Hannah's spidey sense was tingling because she realized that if these ransomware attacks were effectively random, researchers like her could more easily study their impacts. This fall, we did an update on the ransomware attacks harming hospitals and patients. For that show, we talked with Hannah about how she turned her spidey sense into a research study. In October, she and her co-authors released a paper that found if an older American is in the hospital when an attack hits, the chance that they're going to die in the hospital goes up by as much as 20 to 35%. Hannah used to work on Capitol Hill, and as part of that episode, she talked about the role of evidence informing policy.
And I've seen how valuable it is to put cold, hard numbers behind squishy assumptions and beliefs. So I'm hoping that adding some evidence to this policy debate can essentially light a fire to get something done soon.
We launched Tradeoffs in part to highlight the importance of health policy research. So when I found out a health economist published a paper inspired by our journalism, I was psyched. And that brings me back to this super cool health policy community that we're all in. As we wind down 2023, health policy decision makers, elected leaders, and folks just interested in healthcare find value in our work. We blend data with storytelling so people can get facts and appreciate the economic and human stakes. We do this to help our country have smarter, more honest healthcare conversations. 2024 is shaping up to be a busy year. We will cover the elections, crisis care, and of course, ongoing research.
These are two important problems to not keep working on, but they're also two important problems to just declare victory without evidence.
Finally, I want to shout out the rest of the team. Editors Kate Cahan and Deborah Franklin, research reporter Soleil Shah, Kate Seepy in operations, Catherine Dougal, who heads up marketing and audience engagement, Pam Garcia keeps the books clean, and of course, executive director Jessica Silverman. Thanks to our advisory board and our governing board, it takes a whole lot of work from a whole lot of people to make Tradeoff shine. Your gift today, $5 or $500, helps us keep this important journalism rolling. Become a Tradeoff supporter today, and your dollar will go farther with a special dollar-to-dollar match. Want to know more about impact? Check out our 2023 impact report on our website, tradeoffs.org. Go to tradeoffs.org/donate to make your gift today. And thanks. I'm Dan Gorenstein. This is Tradeoffs. Artificial intelligence has the power to revolutionize healthcare, to catch the things doctors and nurses miss, to ease the burden on a burned-out workforce. But there's also a risk that AI could perpetuate inequities long baked into our healthcare system.
When you learn from the past, you replicate the past. You further entrench the past because you take existing inequities and you treat them as the aspiration for how healthcare should be delivered.
Next time on Tradeoffs, part one of a two-part miniseries on racial bias in healthcare AI.
Thanks for listening to Tradeoffs. If you've just discovered us, remember to subscribe to the feed so you never miss an episode. Subscribing is free and easy on whichever podcasting app you use, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. The Tradeoffs team is producers Alex Olgan and Ryan Levy, editors Kate Cahan and Deborah Franklin, executive director Jessica Silverman, marketing director Catherine Dougal, audience engagement lead Shannon Crane, research reporter Soleil Shah with help from Kate Seepy, Kelly Osmondson, and Cedric Wilson, sound designer Andrew Perella, executive editor Dan Gorenstein, and senior producer Leslie Walker. The Tradeoffs theme song was composed by Ty Sitterman with additional music this episode from Blue Dot Sessions and Epidemic Sound. Thanks to all our listeners who have donated this year to help support our work. Our media partner is Side Effects Public Media, based at WFYI. Tradeoffs is supported by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Arnold Ventures, West Health, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, the Sozose Foundation, California Healthcare Foundation, Just Trust, the Leonard Davis Institute of Health Economics at the University of Pennsylvania, and the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The views expressed in this episode are those of the individuals and not those of Tradeoff staff, advisors, or funders.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.